What's up, guys? This is the Against the Grain podcast. It's been a while. It has. And we're back. We're chilling. We've got some things to talk about. We're just getting back into the swing of things, you know? Just hanging out. Jordan Adamo and me, your host, Sky.
Day.
So,
among.
Let's hit it.
The world's greatest moderators.
I thought one of the best points it made was that, like, the next phase of capitalism doesn't need to be adding in socialist policies.
Against the grain!
This is for us. This is for the boys.
Oh, yeah, what is your medical background?
You got that new gene edit?
Just CRISPR me up, bro.
Give me some sugar, baby.
This is for the fly guys.
This is a complete disaster. Yeah, wow, that was crazy.
It's different. So, it's been a while.
It's different. Yeah, it's all right. I think there are changes to be made. Anyway, on the intro, but we'll see what happens.
It's a great start.
Yeah. We can talk about... So you had... Hold on a second. Before we get going here, you had a topic you put in Discord, Adamo, that was about southern cities leading the nation in population growth, but I'm not sure what you were trying to get at on that one.
Oh, man. That's a long time ago.
You don't remember? I was going to say, I thought it was for politics, but it's not. So...
Was it the LinkedIn article of where people are moving to?
It was on like the U.S. Census Bureau, so it probably is a LinkedIn article, but it wasn't a LinkedIn article originally. What it's telling you is like, let's see.
Yeah, summarize.
Basically, it's like the 15 fastest growing large cities in the United States, and a lot of them are southern states. Actually, all of them except for one in Arizona, which could be argued as southern. Yeah.
Yeah. Where's
or Massachusetts how many, a bunch or of them are California? In Texas, right? Texas, Florida. That's it. A lot of them.
Yeah, I don't know, just keep an eye on the macro trends.
That's pretty much all it is.
It needs to stop.
The thing is that, yeah, I mean, I guess that was cool when you sent that. I don't know, but yeah, so what we're looking at right now is the problem with, like, Texas is no longer, like, a great place to buy a home as far as price goes.
I don't think you can lump the whole state into one market. Texas has a lot of real estate markets inside it. But if you're talking about the major cities,
okay,
and where the
DFW, you know, DFW is a whole
migration.
Nice.
Where
nice
the high migration areas are, then that is true. We don't have as good of average wage to home price like ratios anymore.
Like a Tennessee,
especially
does.
For homegrown people that don't work corporate jobs. Being able to afford the, you know, the middle to upper middle housing by their, you know, 40s or 50s is much tougher now, like in West Fort Worth, than it was.
Yeah.
Well, because of this, you know, people are here with corporate remote work salaries that are much higher than, you know, your discount hire manager, if you will.
I wonder how much they actually make. Discount tire managers.
Actually, some of those guys kind of make bank. That might be a bad example.
No, you're good. I think
discount's kind of like an exception, probably. But
the thing is, I mean, you could probably make 100 grand. I mean. You probably make 100 grand right now and still not be able to really afford a home
And that's true. Yeah, like you can afford the base. Like you can afford a starter home, but it's hard to really get past that right now.
It's crazy, man.
Rates obviously don't help.
Yeah, but don't discount the fact that you can still afford a starter home in West Fort Worth. Right, like I mean, I compare that to New Jersey, and you can't be.
But can we define a starter home?
Well,
like, what the heck is a starter home?
So, two things. I agree with Adamo. Like, it's definitely still better than Jersey, but it is not better than what it was here 10 years ago.
Sure,
it's getting worse. I guess I would say starter home.
But I mean, that's true generally speaking around the country, and probably in most. Places around the globe, right?
Well, I was just looking into this, and there's still like the ratio of wages to average home prices in a lot of Midwest cities is still what it was.
Really?
Like wages have gone up, and wages and home prices have gone up everywhere, but in those areas, the wages went up and the home prices went up like in a kind of linear fashion with it, like not.
So more so like general inflation, more like general inflation rather than
right. It kind of matched. So we had the effect of remote workers migrating to southern states to work remote and have much nicer houses than if they lived in West Coast or Northeast. And Texas, Alabama, Georgia, Arizona were great candidates for that. And now that's starting, I mean, they still are, but it's starting to narrow. Now you're getting to the point to where there's like the only places left for that are the Midwest. And you're even in a situation now where you could be someone coming from Texas, bring a Texas salary to Iowa, and
it's true.
Effectively do the same thing that a New York person did to Texas. And apparently in some pockets it's happening, but not at the rate, because it's just not very desirable. People don't like the winters and stuff in the Midwest.
So. Yeah, well, you were telling me too, like, it's basically just this thing where people are just moving around the country, you know, and like maybe that just keeps happening. And so we'll get back
long-term scale.
But yeah.
Like eventually there will be a movement back to California, you know?
Yeah. Well, the other day you also said that you're, go ahead.
I think that's already, to some extent, that's already starting kind of by people's hands are being forced, right? With just return back to office. I mean, that's, I personally, to kind of bet the wrong side of that coin, you know, I really thought that workers would have a little bit more power for a little longer. You know, I figured it would be a trend that would play out, but
is that happening? I didn't know that was happening.
Oh, big time, Sky. Yeah, a lot of
people are having to move and stuff.
Oh yeah,
again,
yeah, big time. Or get laid off.
Whoa, yeah. Really?
I mean, especially certain industries, like
there is. Yeah,
I mean, you look at banking in New York City is almost completely back. You look at, I'll talk to my industry because I know it. Like most, there's only a couple of companies that are still kind of like planting their flag around remote work and actually trying to shed office space, whereas most of the others are kind of stuck in the battle of trying to get employees back 3 days a week. But as soon as they even make any sort of minimum, remote's out the window. Even if they only make, you got to be in the office one or two, they've effectively already kind of shut the door on remote work that way.
I believe I saw that then, like, New York banking is like full back, like the New York worker culture. People are much more back in the office, but the West Coast is not that way.
Well, I just don't think the West Coast was ever really that way anyway. That's
well,
I
those people anyway. Lived there on their like glorious campuses with their cafeterias and everything.
Right.
So I read that how the pandemic, I hate calling it that, how COVID, like,
just call it COVID.
How COVID made the West Coast unaffordable to a lot of the younger, like, engineers and stuff at Silicon Valley tech, you know, big tech companies, where they lived and breathed their like corporate campus. So they would share apartments at the super insane Silicon Valley real estate rental things. They would share apartments with four or five people, or houses with eight people, but they hardly spent any time there. They lived at work. They did all their social life at work, because, you know, there's like beers on tap, and there's games, and everybody, and movie theaters, and there's and all you can eat buffets. Like, they ate all their meals at work. They worked out at work. They worked at work. They hung out at work, and then they just went home and slept. Sometimes they'd even sleep at work. And then when COVID came and they had to go work from home, they now all of a sudden they had to start buying groceries and stuff in
Silicon cost of living goes up.
And their cost of living went up because now they had to like do stuff on their own and not just like live off of their campus.
Right.
Because the big tech companies found a way to sort of to pay, you know, they can pay less per head for all these amenities than what it's actually worth to the individual. Right. So it's almost like another form of compensation. And COVID ruined it when they had to all go work from home. So it caused them to all leave because of, like, they weren't making as much money. They weren't saving as much money as they were beforehand. And so they all left. And now those companies are saying, come back to office. And if some of them have literally moved states, so they will either say no and get laid off, or they will leave themselves, or the company just won't be able to have enough leverage over them and will be forced into more work from home. But it's interesting that, like, the pandemic made them, COVID, like, made them not be able to afford the city now, because beforehand they lived off their campus and then they had to pay for groceries.
Yeah, I think that's the one. Okay, I don't know if it's a good thing necessarily, but it's one big realization that happened during COVID that wasn't necessarily bad, you know?
That California sucked.
Well, maybe that, but also, like, companies maybe realized what they actually needed and didn't need. they realized they maybe had a lot of bloat happening. You know,
but I mean, I think that model was working for them in a way. There was bloat, that's but true. Maybe not in the amenities, maybe in the middle management.
So this is going to be an end to that dual job life. You know, people that have like two remote jobs and they're able to keep that going.
I mean, I think the type of people that could work those the type of jobs that could, that would lend themselves to that are probably the type that would be the last ones to get pulled back in. Cause gotcha. Those are like very, like no meetings, right? Very, not manual, but like very individual intensive roles that you could do two of them. So like I think they'd be unlikely to move that type of role back in the office because it's going to be the type of role that lends itself, you stare at a computer all day.
Well, going back to this, I want to hear your take on that again, Jordan. We talked about this yesterday, but like you said, you think that the bottom of the pricing market is January, February for housing in Texas.
Yeah, I think it might be.
And after that, prices will rise.
If you're a price...
So you were saying you were trying to decide if you're a price or a rate buyer. Right.
Or at least close to a full home price to where the interest... You aren't going to borrow a lot, so the interest rate isn't going to affect you much. I think kind of like Adamo said, there's a lot of little real estate markets that are different regionally in Texas. So I'm kind of talking about our area.
DFW. So this is Dallas-Fort Worth.
Dallas-Fort Worth, specifically growth areas, which... west of Plex is kind of what I'm focused on.
Yeah, the Metroplex, west of Plex.
So we have development, Dean Ranch, Veal Ranch, Walsh Ranch, all trying to land big corporate campuses and industrial and manufacturing things here that are going to bring tons of high-paying jobs to the area, and they're all getting very close to landing these.
And what's your source on that?
I get all the load sheets and at work, I have sources.
It's okay. Straight from the source.
And I'm also on the Parker County EDC, like Economic Development Committee thing. So city planning, like they're trying to figure out how to get water to these. So like different industrial types of businesses need different needs from a utility perspective. They use different amounts of water, and water is a huge problem. And so we'll like sometimes that'll be the issue. So like we've had several different massive industrial companies come through and then not because it kind of fell through. You know, almost landed Rivian, almost landed Panasonic battery manufacturing. And now we're on to the next couple things, but eventually one of them's going to hit. Like it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I think that the macroeconomic trends show like we're kind of printing some lower inflation numbers now. Rates are going to hold at the Fed level. The 10-year bond, which is kind of what mortgage rates follow a little closer in terms of its trend, is trending down.
They've already dropped. I saw like
half
a percentage point.
You're already a half to a full point down on some rates for.
If you want to bring that down, there's that screw.
I got it.
Okay, cool.
So, barring some kind of bearish catalyst, that we can't foresee, if things just kind of carry on and there's no new big narratives in the world, which. Next year is an election year, and it seems like a lot of insane things happen in election year, so that could totally happen. So January, February, the next war might start, the next pandemic might happen. Who knows? Who knows what's going to go down? But if none of that really does go down, then rates will either be held, or and if growth doesn't ramp up, he'll even start to cut them, which will drive home prices up. And then in our area specifically, once risk is on, growth is on, I think that one of our big ranch developers, Veal, Dean, Walsh, whatever, will eventually start landing, finalizing on those deals, which is going to flood this area west of Fort Worth with more high-paying jobs than it even has, and the lowest home prices we will see for the rest of our lives in this area will be Q1 of next year. That's what I think.
What do you think, Adamo?
Yeah,
I like the call. I think the rest of our lives is probably a stretch,
Well, just because you don't see much drawdown on real estate in this area, like it's not hard to make that call.
Yeah, like when you see, you never see this.
I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying that's, I think that part's bold, but I think I think your take is solid. I'm curious. I remember one time we talked about, you know, when you think about cash buying and house flipping, how difficult that is in an area where you have starter homes being literally just printed, you know, by these big developers. And I mean, they probably will literally be printed in the next, you know, in the next decade. Like, I mean, I'm curious, do you see a way around, like, how does when you have $350,000, $400,000 houses just brand new that are very easy to get into in decently desirable areas, how do you handle that? What's your thought on like finding opportunity there?
So that's a good question, or a good point almost. Maybe I need to isolate my call into non-starter homes. And maybe we need to find this, like Sky said at the beginning, maybe we need to define starter home a little bit. But you're right. We have literally printed 3- and 4-bedroom, $300,000 to $400,000 starter homes in this area. It's so high, and all, like, it seems like there's always going to be some inventory there. So those prices may stay flat longer.
I mean, if those jobs come, those houses are going to keep going.
Yeah, they're just
going
to keep printing them.
I just think that
it's the next. Maybe it's the 10-year house, like the one step up.
I'll give you a hot take.
The reason I think the one that never is lower again.
The reason I asked you about the definition of a starter home is because I think it's been eroded away, and the starter home no longer exists. Like, it's not a thing, or it won't be.
I think the goalposts, I get what you're saying. I think the goalposts have moved. I mean, they're
dramatically, right? Yeah, because like before we had starter homes, we didn't have starter homes, and you bought a home and you kept it for 20 plus years.
Yeah, in this area.
And I think more that's common.
I don't know how it works.
I think we're going to come back around to that because we really literally won't be able to afford it.
Yeah.
Do you not see a future where, I guess I'm thinking a little bit too black on this. No,
it's supply and demand, right? It's supply and demand.
You don't think that it's going to be like, you have to rent this, you have to rent for the rest of your life? Think it's going to happen?
I mean, that's allegedly, I haven't studied the market, but allegedly that's kind of what's happening in Ottawa, where there's just so much institutional buying up of homes that there's just the vast majority, like not just a lot, but like the vast majority of the markets of the residential owners are being priced out of the market. But I'm not sure I see that here when most of the homes are owned by individual owners. So any home price appreciation is going to be captured by the existing owner. So then they're going to be able to roll that into the next one. So there could be if there's a cohort of the population that's not increasing their income, that could get priced out. Like, yeah, I could see that happening. But by and large, lots of people own homes, and they're going to profit off of any appreciation in that home and be able to keep rolling it forwards.
And didn't BlackRock and Zillow and Open Door like get crushed?
Not all three of them. Open Zillow Door, did. But not BlackRock.
No, I thought BlackRock was behind some of those deals.
They may have been behind them, but they're also behind a lot of
them. They started buying up insane amounts of real estate, and everybody was like, everybody's just going to be a rental class because they're going to drive up the price, and then they all kind of got wiped.
No, BlackRock was doing that, but that's a separate thing from Zillow and Open Door doing it. So like Zillow did it for their own little experiment to see if they could make something that they got wiped.
And then Open Door did too.
Yes.
I think BlackRock's model is different though. I don't know enough about it, but I don't think you can lump all three together, because I think Zillow and Open Door were really just trying to get those short term flips going.
Right.
It worked in a really fast upswing, right? And as soon as the upswing, the pitch changed, they couldn't do it anymore. And
they're still holding it.
Because Zillow became a broker,
long-term, and then they have companies managing single-family rentals.
I think they're using it for actual assets, and they're
I think so.
Yeah, so if that trend continues, then we could end up in the situation you're talking about. Like, if the ownership of single-family housing becomes more and more centralized...
That's the only way I can see
your that would cause the problem where it becomes inaccessible to us to the common, like somebody who hasn't bought a house yet, somebody who's like a kid right now. You know, you're in an advantage spot if you already own a house by this age, because hopefully your homes appreciate with the market, so you can kind of keep up.
I just keep getting afraid, dude, that I missed this window.
But I think
from where I was at,
I mean, man, there's like, so much land.
You're okay here.
There's so much land to continue developing, especially here. I feel that's true. Like, even in New Jersey, the only place where I mean, maybe in like a Denver or a San Diego where like you're constrained on multiple sides of an attractive area, could you really price a big cohort out? But like here, the Metroplex is just going to keep freaking growing.
They just keep building out and building toll
roads.
We
have plenty of land in Texas.
Northeast suburbs are kind of like that because they're now, it seems like in some ways they're starting to find the upper limit of how far away you can actually get from the city and build suburbia and people still like it. Before I mean,
no longer
Collin County is getting so far out. No, it's ridiculous. Fort Worth has not found that boundary yet where we're like,
at Springtown.
My right? house, yeah, Springtown's insane.
Springtown's what, 45 minutes from the city, maybe 40 minutes?
Yeah.
And it's booming.
Booming. And like Walsh, like that area, Walsh, Morningstar, all that kind of stuff. There's still tons. They're just struggling with utilities. They're just struggling to figure out how to get water to them. Once they figure out that problem, there's so much undeveloped land and they're still just 20 minutes from the city. We haven't even developed it. So we haven't hit those walls yet.
I see all these doom headlines about just like specifically Texas and California and the water situation. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah.
Like, is there really a bad trajectory, Ron?
Go ahead. You were asking him, I guess, but
well,
I also...
no, the room. I'm asking the room.
There's a civil engineer that I talked to about it. Not a civil engineer. Well, she is, I guess, but she works at a consultant for the water utility for Fort Worth. And she literally was like, yeah, actually, the situation is dire.
It's pretty bad.
I was like, what? She's like, dude.
It's probably worse
than the water wars. These are her words. Are going to be a thing. That's what she said. Now, my problem with that is already knowing what I know about how our water is treated anyway, I'm not sure where I can, like... put the two together. That's all my only problem. Because like people still have wells. That still exists. But what she's talking about is like we are getting to the point where we can't treat water fast enough or we have like less water available as a whole in our aquifers, right? Even though that I think that there's I don't know, this is just me talking. I don't really know. I'm spitballing, but like isn't there more like undiscovered underground water that we haven't found? You know what I mean?
I don't think so.
Anyway, that's all I gotta say. But that was her antidote. We
are abundant in the east and hurting in the west of Dallas Fort Worth. It's like the cutoff.
Oh, gotcha.
So there's billion-dollar projects proposed to pipe that water over here.
Right.
But it's extremely complex and it's kind of like LA, nuclear generation where it seems like from a regulatory level, you can never get the project started. And I don't know. Sometimes it seems like to me it's because the special interests of a politician for in the short term, they have more to gain from doing other things. Not big water.
The focus
of a politician today stands to gain if he's a special interest guy or he's like, you know, trying to use his political leverage for his personal gain. There are more short-term things for him to do right now for his lifestyle in the next few years. You really have to have a trailblazer who's passionate about like saving the world to care about something that if you start right now, the payoff is in like 30 years. It's kind of the same as nuclear. And that's how like these big pot water infrastructure, like, oh, Texas is growing west. We're abundant in water in the east, but we're struggling in the west, and we have to get that water over here, so we need to start that project today. We're decades away. It's just, like, hard to get people to focus on it.
Well, yeah, it's like another Elon character.
It's hard to get the tax, but, like, this is another thing where people aren't feeling it yet. But right. It sucks because you need to get the taxpayer to care about this when you still have time to fix it.
Well, I mean,
by the time water rationing is here,
yeah,
then people will care. But now you're still 20 years from your solution. So you need taxpayers to care now, but everybody wants to vote against this type of thing.
I voted for it.
The
water fund passed.
But I don't know if that's going to be enough. It's kind of like the generation thing.
It may not even be.
We need more.
That's but it may not even be a.
But it looks like it is a problem. There's also a problem with like, I don't know the science behind it. But it's bad for your ground and your groundwater levels when you build these huge neighborhoods and you don't have your city water there yet. So you just have everyone drill wells. So like if you go to a neighborhood like Morningstar, it's like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of little 8-acre lots, and every single one of them has their own well drilled.
Oh gosh.
And it's like really bad for the area. It, for some factors that I, and again, I'm not a water guy, so I'm the electric guy, but I have been participating in these economic development calls, and like these guys are like super worried about this for some reason. It's like apparently it's a big dramatic problem where there's no state regulation on holding people back from developing in annexed land where there's no city, where you're out of any city limits, but and there's no city utilities there. Apparently in a lot of other states, there's regulations on what type of residential like development you can do in those areas.
Right.
Like you can't just build a whole bunch of 8-acre lots and drill wells for every single house. And, but that's how Morningstar and them, they get around it because there's no regulation for that here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they just like, oh, the city isn't going to build the water infrastructure out to me. I'll just drill a well for every single lot.
Well, yeah, but if they give me a reason why it's bad, that's fine. But also it could just be government thinking, hey, I want to control this.
You know, I think there's reasons why it's bad. I just that's out of my expertise. Right. I'd have to look it up. It seems to
sounds
be a concern.
Like utilities are trying to get in on that. You know, it's bad. They need to stop drilling wells because we want to sell them more water. You know.
Yeah, you would think, but like water is so controlled by like municipalities. It's like not. It's not like electric and internet and oil, where it's like all these. Investor-owned companies. It's all these municipal districts.
Yeah. Cool, man. Wow.
MUDs, if you will.
Well, why'd you ask, dude? What do you think?
About water?
Yeah.
No, I mean, it you know, there's definitely some fear-mongering in the headlines, and I wonder, you know, how much I ought to be concerned, because, I mean, just out of all of the potential disaster scenarios, if that's, like, a reasonable one that could happen, you know, if they say we're on a 25-year clock, like, we could be wrong in those calculations, right?
It could be 17.
12.
Whoa.
But either way, I just like that's a scary world. And I'm so sensitive to, after just like the brief glimpse of how freaky the public can devolve, like what we saw, you know, in 2020. Like I'm actually really sensitive to like those sort of scenarios and realizing how quickly things could get out of hand in like even in a local area.
Have you always been like that? Has that changed for you?
I mean, you know, things. It just brings, I don't know, you go through scenarios and it brings out things that are like dormant in you. So yeah, I've always kind of been like emergency preparedness minded for a long time.
Yeah.
But then I saw it, right? And I was like, oh shoot. So then of course it kind of dials it up a couple notches.
So you move to Texas, get some chickens, get some quail.
I feel pretty strongly about it.
Yeah, dude, you have a garden going. How do you do that and stay in society? Or does it matter?
Well,
this is just emergency response.
No, listen, I have a competing interest. I have competing interests. I got special interests on the career lobbying me as well. I'm not a.
Listen, rapper. I have special interests. If only politicians came out and said that. Listen, no, I have special interests.
No, it's to me in my life, it's about balance, right? Like finding ways. Just gotta pipe that in there. Thank you.
That's great.
No, it's like finding ways to insulate myself from having to go nuts if disaster were to come, but also not going nuts in the process of trying to insulate yourself.
Yeah, I think this leads into our next topic pretty well.
You know,
you don't want to isolate yourself from society. I get it. And like, there's a lot of fear mongering on a lot of things today, you know, not just water, a lot of things, right?
Like glyphosates.
Yeah, like glyphosates, and I think there is some there in the glyphosate world, but my issue is that, like, do all of these, you know, boy who cried wolf people ruin it for what's actually happening?
Mm.
Because the problem is that it is a real issue, in my opinion. It does definitely exist, and, like, glyphosate's everywhere pretty much, and no one's talking about how we get that fixed. And so without further ado, no, I'm just kidding. Yeah, go ahead, dude.
I mean, there's so much content on this that I'm only gonna give like 10-15 seconds on it, but basically
what the 15 seconds, dude?
Well, you could just search, there's so many podcasts on glyphosate.
Yeah,
there's YouTube videos on it. So this is a chemical developed by Monsanto in the 70s and used, very very effective pesticide. It's accounts for, I think, 25% of pesticide use globally. And but I think more in the U.S. specifically, we like it a lot. And you've probably heard of Monsanto from all the lawsuits, because they're now acquired by Bayer/folded. I think the IP was acquired by Bayer, and Monsanto itself folded because of all the lawsuits it was caught up in. And basically this, it's Monsanto also went on to develop crops that are resistant to this. So super incredible business strategy. They basically created this very effective herbicide and then went and created crops specifically. I think corn and soybeans some of the where it's used most. And basically now farmers spray it on it routinely. And then I also learned that they also desiccate it to dry it out. Like at the end, there's also kind of a use of glyphosate where they, not for herbicide use, but for, you need all your crop to be dry, kind of evenly dry. And it's difficult to get all of that to happen at the same time in the season, allegedly. And so you spray that on it, desiccate it, and then you can harvest it all evenly dry. And then it goes straight to processing. So you can imagine that's a pretty fresh application. And my understanding is it's actually that application that leads to a lot of what ends up in our food. And the reason it's concerning, we're past 15 seconds, aren't we?
This is great. Keep going.
No, the reason it's concerning is that twofold, there's been a massive, massive amount of animal, so preclinical research that, and like cell line research that basically shows that there's extremely detrimental effects, and the list of the detrimental effects are go on and on, endocrine and neurological disorders and gut, dysbiosis disorders, on and on. And then at the same time, when we test, urine, feces, saliva, teeth, inflammation in the brain, when we test different areas, we find traces of glyphosate.
Right.
And so people have been connecting dots for a long time, like, hey, this could be why this could be a contributor to autism, this could be a contributor to ADHD. And the biggest one is non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. That's what all the lawsuits are around. That allegedly there's a pretty strong link between glyphosate, both topical and systemic absorption, and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. All that to say, when I got into it, I didn't actually... So the research that links the clinical outcomes to the how much of it is deadly, right? That's kind of pretty sparse. Obviously, it always goes that way. So you're kind of like connecting dots between detriments and seeing in everything, both food and in our bodies, and then saying, "Hey, this has got to be a contributor."
Right.
So that's the
one thing I want to add. One thing I want to add, the Monsanto thing. So he did also help lobby governments to subsidize corn and soy, and so like a lot of farmers switched to corn and soy in the 60s and 70s, I believe it was, and so we have way more of that crop, and that's specifically the crop that he wanted to be, immune to using this specific pesticide. So it's like he did a whole full circle, basically, as far as business strategy goes, to make it all push through.
I mean, there's been a lot of, I think they engage in a lot of both public sentiment campaigns and lobbying, and obviously lawsuits, litigation. So,
and this is like the kind of stuff you watch movies about, you know?
Became very hated, but you've also, I mean, to give the flip side of it, right? The reason it's being used is because it's effective and better than everything that came before it, right? So when you think about like ecologists use it to control non-invasive species that could take over, wetland or farmland, use it in like national parks to keep the wrong type of species out. Like there's all sorts of good use cases for it. So it's just one of those things, right? It wouldn't be used if it were all bad. It wouldn't be used as much as it is.
Well, this just, okay. I don't know if I can agree. Cause the only thing I can say is like, I am a guy that says like almost everything man-made sucks anyway. So like, I'm good, you know, but I understand that yes, there are use cases for it that are effective-ish, right? I just think like, is there a point where you decide like, okay, how many people is it okay to get autism before we care, or whatever, all the mental problems we have, or all the health problems we have from it? Like if it's effective, that's fine, but like when do we decide that we can't do that?
Well, like so many other things, it's It's hard to know how many people have autism because of it.
And you can't rewind.
I think where I kind of get frustrated is seeing the efforts to kind of squelch any, you know, looking into it or to like having regulatory agencies, you know, publish.
Well, then all you get is these opinions on like momsacrossamerica.com articles.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And like the thing is that you get these articles and you're like, what is this gimmick that I'm reading? You know what I mean? If it doesn't have to be that way, but it's almost like by design so that obviously everyone doesn't worry about it. Fluoride in the water, that doesn't freaking matter. You know, that kind of thing, right? Even though you can look at studies that might show the opposite, but they don't go far enough every time. And I agree with you.
I mean,
it does
get
me going though, dude.
I do believe that if there's decades of research showing that it's, you know, detrimental to human and animal cells and it's in us, then there is a good chance. I do believe that there's a good chance that we want to be avoiding glyphosates, and history will show that it was we shouldn't have it. But I guess to avoid it,
you think we should have a better replacement? Is that what you're going to say?
No. Oh, okay. I'm just saying just the practicality of avoiding it is extremely difficult.
We can't now, dude.
You have to be like all organic, local farmers market.
There's a 2,400 people study that was done that basically showed, I think it was like 88% of those people had it in their blood. So like,
I mean,
basically,
they
like
tested
you're done.
Teeth and 80% of your people, urine, whatever. Everybody has, we've all got it in us.
Right.
But like, to play devil's advocate, to what level? Does it matter? Right? You can.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah. A lot of the research that shows how toxic it is, they're literally giving cups of it. You know, these animals are drinking it. So we show it, I know it's sad. We show it toxic at like insanely high concentration levels. And you would say, okay, well, so does it matter that I have picograms in my teeth? You know?
I guess, yeah.
That's not there. I don't believe the answer's known.
The answer's not known, right? Okay. All right, cool. Well, yeah, like I said, this article was talking about glyphosate, and it was basically the top 20 fast food brands that were positive for glyphosate and how much it had in it. So basically they took two samples from each of these locations they used, and then they sent them off to get tested so they could tell you how many, what is it called? Like micro, I don't know. I don't know what you'd call that. It's something in a milliliter. What is it? What is it called? Whenever they're testing in a fluid.
I think they were looking at parts per billion.
Parts per.
Is that what they were looking at?
Okay, yeah. Parts per million. That's what I was trying to get to. Anyway, so they tested all of them, and I guess the top fast food brands that, you know, made the list, had the most glyphosate in them, were Arby's and looks like Arby's, Dairy Queen.
Let's go. Number one and two. That's podium finishers right there.
Yeah. And then Panera.
That doesn't surprise me.
Three people I hate.
Panera has a lot.
Well, listen, I mean, Panera is such a huge consumer of... let me back up. So wheat and like cereals is one of the biggest offenders of like absorbing glyphosate.
Right.
And so it doesn't surprise me that someone like Panera, whose supply chain revolves around getting the cheapest bread, making the cheapest bread in the universe, right? Probably has the most... Whatever hyper-efficient farming methods are out there is probably what's supplying Panera, if I had to guess.
Yeah, it kind of surprised me, though, because the least ones were Chipotle, Panda Express,
which is crazy for me.
Panda Express.
This list vilified me. It vindicated.
Well, then Pizza Hut,
dude.
It's
so closely aligned with my...
Vilified?
Like, Pizza Hut, like, doesn't have... It's crazy.
Pizza Hut's actually wild. That one's surprising.
I think
it's because Pizza Hut's supply chain is probably still stuck in the 70s pre-Roundup.
Yeah, check this out, dude. Check this out. Domino's, right? A total of, let me just give you the numbers to show you the kind of difference. I know you won't know what the number actually signifies, but Domino's is like a 77 and Pizza Hut is a 17. So that gives you the difference, right? Whenever the top Arby's is 233, sorry, one of the top is 233 and the Panera is 439. So,
Domino's
wildly
made me sad.
Crazy, dude.
Out of all those Domino's
made you sad, yeah.
But at the end of the day, I have no idea what any of those levels mean. But so it's just a relative scale, I guess.
It is relative scale.
It could be very subjective day to day.
There were a couple of MDs, there was a couple of PhDs that responded to the study and saw the actual, study, I guess. I don't know, paperwork for it, whatever. And they said, this is crazy, whatever, you know. I don't know if that necessarily tells you that they thought it was a good study or a bad study, but that's all I got.
Listen,
that.
I mean, they sampled
two. It's moms across America,
yeah,
dude. What are we going to do here? You know,
two chicken sandwiches from across the USA. Like,
right.
I bet they get their ingredients from different sources in different parts of the US.
Yeah.
So you can't read.
Oh, yeah. And then McDonald's. Yeah, McDonald's was super
low. You can't read
too
much.
Which is crazy.
Can't read too much into it, but I appreciate them doing the work, at least drawing attention to it.
Yeah, man. That's kind of my life state concern on that. What do you think?
I have a family member who's specifically now just buying only grass-fed and grass-finished steaks because corn is inflammatory. I am hoping that you all agree with me that maybe that's taking it a little too far.
That's why I brought this up.
Corn is like literally, if you're eating a steak from a corn-finished cow, that's enough to get you there actually mattering.
No, because most grass-fed is grain-finished, and so
grain-finished, yeah.
So is this actually specifically corn finished, or is she just saying that because it's a grain
corn,
finished?
She's saying that corn is inflammatory, so you gotta eat grass.
Your family member will be proud of me that I just bought 40 pounds of grass fed beef.
Is it actually grass finished? Are you sure?
Yes, I'm sure.
Most of the time, the grass fed is grain finished. The only reason they do that is it's actually, first of all, grain fed beef tastes better in general.
Right, yeah.
Even for healthy people that are like, oh my gosh, grass-fed, it does, okay? Yeah. Can't lie to me about that. It does taste better. And second of all, whenever you grain finish a cow, it's like the last month. It's not even that long compared to the cow's life. The cow is also way healthier anyway, so it's all in all just better. So like, you're not getting all the inflammatory markers from the cow in the first place.
Right, so I don't think there's very many corn-fed cows in Texas generally.
That's why I said grain fed. And I'm not sure.
Maybe they
just use a ton of corn and their grain.
A ton of the corn is for feeding the cows, I think.
Right. Because even like big farms that are all about, you know, not doing monocrop agriculture are like saying, you know, we still grain finish our cows, but it's like very much, you don't understand the differences in how sick a totally grain fed cow is versus a grass fed grain finished cow. So like a cow that is grain fed all the time may live 2 years. 4 years max, and that's on purpose because they're just trying to get them as fat as possible. The level of obesity is insane. So if you can imagine having an obese human and how unhealthy that is for them and how many diseases they might carry, that's the cow that's grain-fed. So that now this has turned into an argument against grain-fed cows altogether, but grain-finished doesn't do that.
Right.
And obviously, cows were designed to eat grass and all the things on the earth. They weren't designed to be force-fed grains.
Yeah, that totally makes sense.
And that's why all the cows have the antibiotics. They have all the things protecting them against diseases because they're so fat they have to have it. Or else they would just die, kill over right there on the spot.
Literally die.
Yeah.
To your point, though, so, Jordan, I mean, yeah, my main takeaway is like, man, even if you did feel, if you came down so strong on this issue, like, what can you, I mean, there's, you'd have to turn a lot of stones over in your life to be able to make the adjustment.
Like that one, like which steak, how the cow was fed that made the steak that you ate, it's probably pretty far down, like other ingredient, like just eating the corn itself.
Yeah.
Which was my next point. So I pretty consistently put a can of corn.
This is why he wants the justification.
I came here to learn today. Okay. I didn't bring any of my own topics. Do I need to stop? Am I eating more glyphosate because I'm literally eating a can of corn in my taco bowls every week?
No, see, this is where
I need to cut corn out? Like, is corn specifically an offender over my ground beef, my rice, my beans?
I think generally speaking, you'd have to go broader than just canned corn just to worry about. Yeah, you'd have to worry. It's really like, this is insane to even vocalize this, but it's literally true. Like, are you going to eat crops grown at big farms in the US, period, or not, right? Or are you gonna buy either imported places where it's banned from, which, by the way, Mexico is actually trying to ban it, which is huge because actually a lot of Texas crops come from Mexico. Yeah. So that would actually be very nice because then you could go to your big box store and
it
pick
helps
up
us at the source instead of you having to do it as the consumer from the trendy
but
grocery store.
Another, to my point, I think
that you trust their
if you really wanted to make changes, you'd have to be like, okay, instead of let me just stop putting this can of corn in, like, I'm not going to buy any more veggies at HEB. I'm going to be a farmer's market guy. Like, that would be the HEB, change that maybe could make enough of a difference.
To be specific, HEB tries to avoid that stuff. So I'll say that because I looked into it a little bit. They at least avoid Apeel, which is a certain brand of a pesticide. I don't actually know if it is glyphosate, but they avoid that intentionally. Mm. So it wouldn't surprise me if they try to avoid other things as well. Meanwhile, Albertsons and those other places don't care about that, and they don't try to avoid it. That's just on Apeel's website, though. APEEL. That's how you spell that.
Interesting. I would. Anyway. I would love to see if you guys ever run across this research. We should discuss it. But I would love to see like a comparison of of our local grocery stores, like who does the best sourcing for like just their regular. I know it's something HEB talks about and they really market the whole local.
But that doesn't, yeah.
But
it doesn't, you don't know.
You don't know. To me, yeah. The thing is too, is that some places, they don't have to advertise that. They don't have to tell anybody where they get their stuff. They don't have to.
Of course not.
So when you look at it and they're like, it's not listed, it's like, well, it may not be listed because they just didn't provide that information. It doesn't mean that they automatically don't use this specific crop, you know?
I think one big thing we could do if, you know, just in the friends group, we wanted to get serious about this, is we could just try and find a local food co-op and do some bulk orders of organic food together. I think that would actually make a pretty big, it would take the stress of having to go find this random store and this random store that carries this, and I got to buy my pasta from Italy, literally. And instead, just like
freaking awesome,
make one order, you know, you cut out whatever 20-30% of your food now comes from this.
Yeah.
I just think, okay, so this is where it brings my next question up, is like, how far do we go before we're like crazy? You know, like, is there a point where...
Well, I'm trying to come up with like, that's what I'm trying to get to. It's like, what's the practical things that we could actually do?
Right.
That could make a difference rather than just, okay, I'm not going to put this corn in my bowl anymore, you know?
Right. With what you asked, I'm not sure if I would be on that page until I can actually make a more drastic difference in my life. So like, if I'm just going to cut out corn, I don't know if that's going to be the move I do just because it's not enough. So it'd be like, until I can figure out a whole solution, like
for that issue specifically.
So I wouldn't be super worried about that. And then
if you told me
it
was sodas, right? Like, okay, if I cut this my daily Dr. Pepper out, like I'd be like, yeah,
let's just say processed foods, dude. Like everyone's on board now with the fact that processed foods are probably bad for you. We just got to do the same thing for these other things that we see. They're like, well, now you're processing every food now.
Hey, do you think the 45 pigs in a blanket I've eaten in the last 48 hours are going to... I'm going to regret those.
To your relative's point, like to back on your relative or whatever you were talking about, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I think
that... Nobody can guess who that is.
Right?
I think that... I don't know. I think that if you... That's your thing? And you have the money to avoid that?
Everybody's got their thing.
And you have the money to avoid that? You know, by all means, you can do that, but also...
Well, to be fair, right? If you're already going to a local butcher to get grass-fed beef...
Keep doing it.
It's not even a half step. It's a quarter step further to be like, I want grass fed, grass finished.
Yeah.
If you're already making that change, right?
Right. And it's also not, I don't think it's more expensive. In fact, I think the grain finished would be more expensive because it changes the process for them.
Thanks, guys. Right?
It's harder to do that as a farmer.
It's not when it's specifically marketed that way at Central Market.
Okay. Now we're on a different playing field. Central Market is like, yeah, it's called Central Market for a reason.
It's called Central Market.
Central Marketer's freaking dream or whatever. You know?
Nice.
Anyway, so that's what I have on that whole subject. That's a good question, man.
Thank you, sir.
Anyway, it was a good one. That was a good one to look into. Another one of those freaking things that we all just live with. We're passive participants in glyphosate ingestion.
I love to bring the friend group bulk order to bring farmers, make farmer local farmer food accessible from a price perspective.
Well, and I'm not sure.
I'll do a little research first.
That's against the grain, dude, honestly.
It is.
Oh, well, that's literally... Oh, so, okay, change the logo. It's now wheat. We're back to wheat. against the grain.
If you are listening at one time, when I was trying to find the logo for the brand and for the podcast, it was like a piece of wheat and it just said against the grain.
Sky didn't realize we were talking about wood, but now we're back to wheat now.
I literally had no idea. I was like, oh, this
put
is a grain.
All the grains, dude. All the grains grown in the U.S. were against them.
That is so funny. Hey, guys, if you're listening to this and you have any ideas or you already do the avoidance of glyphosate and you know what you're doing and you've done it for a while, please hit us up. Help us out. There's a reasonable solution. We'll bring it up on the pod.
How about, so in contrast to just avoiding corn in my bowl, how well would I do to not be inhaling it when I spray it on the weeds in my backyard?
You know, believe it or not, that actually counteracts the stuff you're eating.
I feel a little bit of a headache and nausea when I do it.
Yeah, I would say you're getting closer to the mice who have sperm that can't move.
It's
crossed the blood brain barrier is all I'm gonna say to you.
I've inhaled some glyphosate in my day a lot.
Can you explain
my parents made me spray it everywhere.
Blood brain barrier.
Oh boy, I'm not an expert, but here we go. It's exactly what it sounds like. It's a it's a barrier that is around your whole goes around your whole skull, and it protects toxins and things like that from getting into your brain. And it's a big deal, and it's pretty effective at keeping things out, and only certain substances are able to cross it. And so specifically, it's a big deal in the pharmacological world, whether a drug can cross the blood-brain barrier or not, because that changes how well it can act. It also changes its safety profile if it can get into your brain. So it's pretty much just like a super effective filter that God gave us around our most sensitive area.
Nice. All right, cool. We've been here an hour.
Take a little break.
We can take a little break. Cool. Guys, thanks for listening. This has been Against the Grain. We will see y'all next time. Toasty.